Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, I'm excited to meet one of my role models, Senior Vice President at Allergan. This is Edris Simmons. Edris, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. And thank you for saying that. I think we're probably each other's role models and mentors. So thanks for having me.
Definitely. Yeah. I think for all of our women listeners out there, it takes so long to become an overnight success. Oh. The success that you have and that I have slaved for the last 20 years.
Exactly.
I don't know
exactly.
About you, but
absolutely.
I've worked
absolutely
very hard to struggle and climb up and to finally reach a position where your voice has authority and the ability to direct and change a platform. That must be so rewarding.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I always think I never arrived. None of us ever have.
Right.
And yeah, I think from a small time that I was a little girl, you know, my parents always taught us to do your best, be excellent at what you do, and be a leader. And I didn't realize at seven, you know, that that would still be true today. And I think I'm still always striving for that. But I will say that none of us get there without each other. So I think it's through the partnerships with people like you that I continue to strive to be that every day, but certainly haven't arrived, but super thankful for the opportunities I have today.
Well, your journey started with Eli Lilly, which is an international pharmaceutical company and a $24 billion company, and then you joined AbbVie directing their marketing for immunology, and 2 years later you were promoted again, and now you're interested in cutting edge technologies like AI and machine learning, and I understand you're going to evolve Allergan to the next level. What are your goals as senior VP this year?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's like threefold. One is to make sure that all of our products represent everyone. We know that the brands that we have today and the consumers that are using our brands, they just expect so much more. I don't know about you, with your children or my nieces and nephews, they have high expectations for brands and they want to be representative. So I think the first thing is to make sure that all of the consumers that use our brands, that they see themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think the second thing is just continuing to innovate. It's so important that we see ourselves as the leaders in this space, and we want to make sure that we are cutting edge on all the innovation. We've got a lot of innovation coming in the future. And then I think the last thing is, you know, a simple thing, but we want to attract the best talent and the most diverse talent, and making it a place that people want to work. And we strive to make sure that people feel like they belong in our organization. So I think continuing to make sure that our brands represent everyone, they see themselves, cutting edge innovation, and making Allergan Aesthetics a place that people want to work.
Mm-hmm.
By ensuring that everybody feels like they belong.
So you are a type A leader. Let's dive into a little bit more about you.
Yeah.
I'm going to do rapid fire some questions.
Good, so great, great.
Let's hear what your answers are just
okay.
To get to know you better. Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Yoga or high intensity fit training?
That one's hard, but yoga.
Yoga, okay.
Yeah.
Books or movies?
Books.
Nice. Rom-coms or action adventure?
Rom-coms.
Really?
Sure.
Oh, okay.
Like,
awesome.
Yeah, I'm a lover. I'm a lover, not a fighter, for sure.
Are you a cook or are you better with eating gourmet?
Oh, wow. I grew up on a farm, so I like farm to table. I'd say cook.
Awesome.
Yeah.
How about spa day versus like build something?
Spa day for sure. I don't get many of them anymore, but spa day for sure.
Spa day for sure. And who would you say your role models are that are outside of industry?
First of all, my mother.
Mm-hmm.
She was a CFO for the Army in very difficult times back in the 70s when brown women weren't leaders. And she was in the boardroom holding the purse.
Mm-hmm.
I would also say, you know, interesting enough, like, people like, I just read Viola Davis's book.
Mm.
It's called Finding Me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've watched her really climb in the world of being a great actress, and she had a lot of pain in her life growing up, and so I'm always for kind of the underdog, and her story's really interesting too. And you know, I would say that, you know, I'm Catholic. I grew up with nuns in my life, and there's a very special nun in my life. She's 93, and she still asked me, and she started asking me this when I was a young girl, how are you using your energy?
Yeah.
And you and I just talked about it.
Yes.
Every time I talk to her, I just saw her a couple weeks ago, and she's losing some of her memory, and she still said, you know, like, again, just how are you using your energy? And essentially what she's saying is, like, we only have so much energy in the world,
yeah,
in our lives, and how we use our energy is so important. So those have really been the mentors in my life that have helped shaped kind of how I think. My mom, you know, I think people like Viola Davis,
mm-hmm,
started off kind of with nothing, and she's really achieved. And this very special nun in my life who always asked me, how are you using your energy?
That's such a great question, because we're given this life force, and every day we just live like 9 to 5 without even thinking of how do we direct that towards,
yes,
a goal or a something we want to leave behind.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What are your top 3 qualities?
Well, that's
this
good.
This is not a job interview.
That's all right. That's fine. I would say that I'm loyal.
Mm.
When you've been a friend of mine for a long time, I don't pick friends lightly, but I'm extremely loyal.
Mm-hmm.
I would also say that good or bad, I'm disciplined.
Good.
Like we just talked about, super disciplined with my time.
Mm-hmm.
Very disciplined about if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. And
that must come from your mom a little bit.
Super disciplined. And I would say the last thing is, I try not to take myself too serious.
That's good.
So some people say, you know, humble. I don't know what that means, but I take life serious. I take work serious. I don't take myself very serious.
That's good. That's a great, keeping it real.
Yeah.
What's the last app you've used on your phone or your favorite app that you think?
Wow, that's interesting. So I'm a big CrossFitter.
Hmm.
And I use that app almost every day to sign up for a class called Zen.
Mm.
And instead of just like showing up at the gym every day, it's really interesting that they make us sign up for class.
Mm-hmm.
So like it's the accountability of like you signed up last night.
Right.
So are you going to show up the next day?
Right. That's
so
really
I probably
good.
Use that app more than anything.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And then if you could change one big thing this year about your life, what would it be? Personal, professional, anything?
That's a really good one. I think, there's so much going on in society as it relates to just health disparities, any disparity. And it's something that I'm super passionate about. I don't think I get enough time to spend time on it. I went to my first kind of rally this year for Black Lives Matter earlier this year. And it's something that I'm super passionate about. And I think that for anybody who's dealing with a disparity,
mm-hmm,
I don't spend as much time kind of out in the community fighting for things that I feel really strongly about or believe in. And I wish I just had more time to do that.
Yeah. Where are you going to put your energy this year?
Where are you going to put your energy this
year?
That's
such a great question. That's a good theme of this interview almost.
Yes.
I love that because it makes, I've been asking myself that question too.
Yeah,
once you have a certain level of, you know, success where you feel like you have stability, then you need to ask the bigger questions of what am I going to do with my intelligence, with my resources, with my energies this year.
Yeah.
I like to evolve our field of aesthetics. I'd like to change it in some ways.
Because
I think in many ways it's been definitely a very male-dominated field. Research is driven by men, therapies have been driven by men, board of directors and companies, and now we're seeing many more women enter leadership roles like yourself, so that's very refreshing. What are your thoughts on how you can provoke change?
And aesthetics are just period. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that we do is a lot of our products start at clinical trial time.
Yes, right? From inception,
when the idea comes. We bring, you know, consumers, patients in to use our products, whether it's on therapeutic side or aesthetics or wherever it is. And I was struck by this. I was just with an organization that focuses on plastic surgeons who were starting medical school. And so I went to this all-day event, and I walked in the room, and Dr. K, there were probably 75 persons of color, women, men, in that room. And all I was thinking was, like, what happens between the time that, I mean, these were fourth year medical students who were finishing school,
mm-hmm,
but if you look at the data,
mm-hmm,
I think less than 2 or 3% of those people actually make it to becoming a plastic surgeon.
Right.
And so I was just struck by that. And even if they do, many of them don't make it to being like investigators.
Right.
And so I think one of the things is just from the inception, whether it's aesthetics or therapeutics or whatever, like what are we doing to broaden the field for clinical investigators that are, you know, again, of all genders, all shapes, all sizes, all colors, because generally what I find, and I don't know if you see this in your practice, is they bring more consumers that are more broad, that may look like them. And so if we have a broad set of clinical investors that start from inception, then I think we can get all of our products, all of our brands, you know, at a stage that are, you know, looking at a diverse set of people that experience our diversity. So I think one of the things that I do is that, you know, I ask, you know, very simple, tough questions, I think. So when I see our clinical investigators or when I see, when we have a training and I see the faculty, I just ask the question, like, what are we doing to make this clinical trial, these clinical investigators, this clinical training more look like the population that we have?
For anybody listening out
In the community, you know, it's I think sometimes just asking the question, I think you have to have the broad set of people asking the question. If you ask the question and I ask the question and more females ask the question, and I mean, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter who it is, but I don't think it's that difficult. I think it's the courage to ask the question. And then again, I think for companies like AbbVie, Lilly, Allergan, I appreciate the fact that they put me in a job where I can ask the question.
Yeah, definitely. Asking the question and then seeing the answer through to follow through some level of change. Like, for people listening, I don't think they quite understand that it's a very intimidating and exclusive field. Like, as a woman, and a woman of color myself, struggling to finally, it took me 10 years to become chairman of my department of head and neck surgery. 10 years. And you sit at a table of people that are generally all men, generally all white males. And it's okay, good, but you need to show up every day to that table. Because sometimes we lose the battle because people just don't come to the table.
That's exactly right.
And they don't
open
their mouth and they don't ask the questions.
Exactly right. That's right.
So that for me has been instrumental.
Yeah.
But the more I come to the table, the more I realize that the table lacks diversity and that the products are researched and investigated in a way that excludes major sectors of the population.
Yeah.
So I think that will be refreshing to see more research done on skin of color. Just instead of just assuming that skin is skin is skin.
That's right.
A major scientific fallacy that we don't realize that skin is different for every person.
And I think the other thing too, you know, as I'm sure you do, even people who are listening today, sometimes we don't ask for the big job.
Yeah.
You gotta ask for the chairman job.
You gotta ask
for the big job. I mean, I think as I talk to several people, I always say somebody's gotta be the CEO.
Yeah.
I mean, and most people are like, well, I don't think I can be the CEO, but somebody's got to be the CEO. Somebody's got to be the chairman. Somebody's got to be the senior vice president or president.
Well, I'm seeing that in my own daughters. Yeah. They're like graduating college and not even applying for these jobs where I'm like, just put yourself out there, put your foot in the door.
Yeah.
They say that women expect themselves to meet 90% of job qualifications before they'll even consider it.
That's right.
And men only about 40 to 50%.
Yes.
So they'll apply for a job knowing that they're only half qualified, but women won't even apply.
Yeah.
And so I think we do need to like just risk it a little and trust our confidence that we can handle it when we get there.
Well, if I was waiting to be ready for every job, I probably wouldn't be in any. I don't know about you, but you know.
I wouldn't get out of bed every day.
That's right. I wouldn't be in any of them.
Well, you talked a little bit about when you came in about confidence and how important confidence was to you. Has that been a defining theme for you?
I mean, it has been at the central, I think, one of the core principles since I've been a little girl, and I'm sure you do this with your daughters, but I mean, my mom, you know, I always say this.
And
you
my son.
You can edit this out, but like, she was a badass.
Yeah.
I mean, she just really was. I mean, I think about, you know, she was the CFO of the Army. She was writing the checks. She had the purse.
That's amazing.
And she, you know, was, you know, still, you know, at all of our events and, you know, and she traveled and she wasn't, you know, she didn't coddle us every day, but she basically built confidence in us that we could do and be anything that we wanted to. And we didn't live in the greatest environment. We lived in a very rural, all-white community on a farm. But that's the one thing I think she always taught us is just, again, do your very best, be excellent at what you do, tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think confidence is defined by knowing what you're good at and what you're not good at, and being okay with the things that you're not good at. That you, you know, listen, I have a team of people. I've always had a team of people. I would not be here without those team of people. And, you know, I'm confident to know that when I know, and I'm confident to know when I don't know, and ask for somebody else to help.
Right.
And I think that that has been a central pillar just of my life, frankly. And, you know, and it's also fine to admit when you're not right.
Mm-hmm.
Or when you're wrong,
exactly.
Or when you've done something, you've made a mistake. I think those are all things that are, like, to me, are central components of being confident.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that I think is really critical is being able to start a project without knowing it's 100% perfect. Because that's the other thing that holds women back as professionals is perfectionism.
Yes. Yeah.
And that goes hand in hand with confidence.
Yeah,
like, as long as you are confident you can make something work, even if it's not 100% perfect, you should just launch it.
That's right.
Because you can always have version 2.0 and you can always modify and improve later. But if you're going to rely on being a perfectionist about every little thing from child rearing to work, it's going to be very hard for you.
It's hard
to be. I think women have a lot of demands on them in terms of running a household, running a business, and, you know, having, raising family or kids sometimes. Any advice on being a multitasker or how to prioritize and compartmentalize life?
Yeah, you know, I think I was talking to a group of women in finance at our organization, and really the theme of that discussion was, like, do more without being more. I mean, I'm sorry. Be more without doing more. Sorry. And be more without doing more. And again, I go back to kind of, I just look at what my mother did, and I think it's central part of being more without doing more is communication.
Yeah.
So it's tough sometimes to say, I need to leave this meeting early.
Right.
Because, you know, for those people who have kids, because my kid is in the finals of a baseball game and I don't want to miss this one.
Right.
I've missed 5 of them already this year because I had something else to do.
Yeah.
But this one I don't want to miss. And,
right.
You know, I always share with women, put it on your calendar. Tell your boss.
Right.
Tell your kid.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're held accountable. And then I also do the same thing the other way. Sometimes, at home, I'll say, listen, I'm not going to make the birthday party this time,
right.
And here's why,
yeah.
Right? And I just think it's communicating. I try to have a balance of sometimes work wins and sometimes home wins.
Mm-hmm.
And I want work to know that sometimes home wins, and I want home to know that sometimes work wins.
Yeah.
And that's the only way that I can balance it. But I find that communication on both sides is really important.
And giving yourself some slack, like letting go of the guilt that one side's going to win, and that's just life.
I mean, it's just, you know, they say work-life balance. I don't know what that is,
there
but I do
any.
Know that, like, there's times that work is winning, and there's times that home is winning, and I try to balance who's winning.
Yeah.
You know?
That's
but communication, I think, is really important. Like, you know, I try to communicate with my boss. These are the couple things that are really important to me.
Right.
And these are the times that you can expect that, like, home's going to win.
Yeah.
And I also try to communicate at home. These are the things that I really need to get done at work during these times.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the time when work's going to win.
I always had working parents, too. And
yeah.
I never really perceived that my parents felt guilty about leaving kids at home or being like, you know, I got home at 2-3 o'clock. No one was home till 6, kind of like a latchkey kid. But that never bothered me as a kid because I knew that my mom had a mission. She had things to do, and I had to take a responsibility. And I want to raise kids also that don't need to be so coddled that they can't handle 3 hours in a day.
It's true. I mean, my mom traveled all the time. There was no cell phones.
No.
There
right?
was no iPad.
You had to figure stuff out.
Yeah, I mean, she would travel to Europe all the time, and she'd be gone 2 or 3 weeks. And, you know, she'd maybe call us a couple times. We were fine.
Yeah.
Kids are resilient, and you know, I grew up watching a mom in a boardroom, you know, traveling, living different places, taking us. And, I mean, that really helped shape, I think, who I am today versus if she would have been at every single thing I did and always home.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think kids are resilient. People
mm-hmm.
are resilient. And I didn't realize at the time what my mom was teaching me by being an executive. And I'm so glad she did.
Yeah, it imprints on your childhood brain to see that a mom has so many roles and it's not just sit there and run the house and take care of the kid.
That's right.
So it
that's
does
right.
give you a different perspective.
That's right.
What are you noticing when you travel throughout the country to aesthetic offices all around the country? Do you see any big major trends happening or things that excite you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't want to speak too much on Allergan here, but I think that...
We want to hear all about Allergan.
I guess in my own personal views here is, you know, and you're seeing in your office, I see it all the time with what you're doing is... I think the trend that I'm seeing is that, you know, I used to think about aesthetics being for people that were not like me.
Right.
And now what I see all over the country and outside the country is, I mean, aesthetics is for real people. Mm-hmm. Real people who want to be them, their best self, their real self. And it's almost like talking about, you know, getting a toxin is like, everyday...
It's
an everyday thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And before, it seems like 20 years ago, we think about the evolution of toxins, Botox. We just had our 20th year anniversary. Like, you know, that's not something people talked about. You know, people did not want to tell anybody that they had a toxin. And right. now it's like, you know, all my friends know I have Botox. You know, right. I'm almost kind of like, why don't you? You know, or any toxin, you know.
Yeah.
I think that trend is changing, that all these brands, no matter what organization it is, they're for all people. Mm-hmm. For real people who want to become their best selves. You know, I also think, too, that, you know, I think the second trend is, I know when it gets to my nieces and nephews, mm-hmm. that it's, you know, and you're probably seeing this, too. My nephew came to our home and was stirring around our house, and I was asking my sister what was wrong with him, and he was upset because he had forgotten his face cream.
Oh, goodness.
He was, like, 13.
Really?
Right? So, I mean, I knew then, you know, and, like, my niece, who's had, you know, she's had, you know, some plastic surgery work done, and it's just their health is so important to them, and they're so proactive about how they see themselves. I don't know if social media has done that or not, but I think that's the second trend, is like the millennial, and I don't know what the group is behind them, but you know, their Gen Z, their aesthetic appearance, and it's just so important to them.
Mm-hmm.
I was probably walking around with pimples on my face at 13, you know.
I know.
Not
right?
worried about, yeah. you know, my cream.
Wearing retainers and braces looking our best.
Yes.
Not looking our best, but
yes,
yeah.
yeah.
And well, I think it's to a fault, though, that social media has made them so image focused.
Yeah, yeah. So, I think the third thing is, I think these market trends are going to be around for a while. I mean, when I look over the next 10 years and we look over the next 10 years, I mean, people who are getting toxins, fillers, you know, all the other body treatments, I think it's here to stay. I don't think this volume is going to slow down. I think what we predict is that it's going to grow.
Exponentially
going to grow.
Yeah.
Triple in the next, you know.
Well, you're talking to a surgeon, and I feel like all day long I do injectables because...
Yeah.
People want non-invasive, no downtime, look good, feel good right away, confidence boost. And not everybody's rushing to be under the knife anymore. So I think.
And I think surgeries will be too. I mean, things that I gotta be honest, things that I would never thought that I would think of. You know, would I get this surgery? Would I not? I gotta be honest. I don't think. You know, maybe because I'm in the OR now and I see these surgeons and what great artists you guys are, and you know. I think the trends on all of aesthetics will continue to grow. And I think we have strong data that supports them. I'm sure all the organizations do, but...
How's Allergan going to use AI to kind of harvest that data? Is that through social media apps, through paid ads?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we have Ally is our, you know, technology platform. I think when I'm talking to the leader of our group, Jason Gilmore, who runs that, you know, I think people thought of Ally as a loyalty program. I think if you ask Jason what he sees for the future, we see it being the single most largest marketing technology machine that help practices drive, you know, revenue, productivity, drive consumers into practices. And so I think it is one of the single most important investments that we will make outside of our R&D investment that we make for innovation. So we plan to, it already is doing so much for our organization, and it's a big investment that will continue to, I think, set us apart from other manufacturers. The Ally technology platform is definitely leading the way in the space, and we believe it'll be, you know, one of the most important technology machines we have. I always tell my wife, who's on TikTok all the time, I would, you know, she's like, I just can't believe TikTok's free and it's great. And I'm like, TikTok is one of the biggest data technology machines out there. I mean, it's they're amazing. Collecting data.
Yeah.
We're having fun with it, right?
I have
I'm having tons of fun with it. I know you are too, but I mean, they're analyzing data and they're getting data on, you know, that they're personalizing data in a way that I've never seen before.
Right.
When you look at like their algorithms and like when I look on TikTok
Does that scare you?
No, I mean, I think I want a brand that understands me. I think we all do.
Yeah, makes the app more fun to use.
I mean, it cuts, and we're going back, it cuts down on time, it makes things efficient. I mean, if my the brands that understand me the most can serve me up content that understand me, mm-hmm. I'm likely to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates more efficiencies for me. I can just, you know, if Converse knows what shoes I like, fantastic. Put it in front of me, I'm probably going to buy it.
Right. That's what
saves me time.
Kind of true.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then you can see how what they think of you. Like, my husband's like, I keep getting served aesthetics ads just because I follow you. He's like,
yeah,
this is
true.
Annoying.
That's true, too. That's true, too.
But I love that idea. And then as you guys dive forward, are you going to invest more into social media strategies for marketing and
Yeah, I mean, I think we are today. And certainly, if that's not well known, we need to do a better job. But yeah, I mean, social's a big part of the technology platform and the consumer platform. In fact, I mean, I think, again, I don't want to speak on behalf of the organization. There's somebody who does this work every day much better than I do. But, like, being personalized and being able to personalize our brands to our consumers is at the top of our priority. And I think we do a pretty good job today. I think we can do better, and we'll continue to look at ways to do better. But we have people that their number one focus at our organization is just on personalization,
right.
And making sure that our brands show up to people in a way that, you know, we all want, which is like, this brand gets me.
Yeah. I think it's hard that corporate has a hard job connecting with consumers because it can come across a little forced. And I don't know anybody who's going to like go, I'm going to go look at Allergan's TikTok today. Like,
that's right.
That's a that's little it. Like you're making the TikToks, but are they really connecting at the same, the right level? So mm-hmm. it's a challenging job because mm-hmm. you can advertise a very corporate image, but is that what is going to draw clients in? So I'm just curious how you think about that. But
listen, I think you guys are, honestly, people like you, you're our best way, I think, for...
To connect,
right? Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, as you said, like, if we were going to use our, you know, and again, we have compliance and legal for a reason, and, you know, they're there to protect us, but
right.
I agree. If we want to have our best content, it's not going to be because somebody's going to, like, the Allergan, you know, Facebook page or Instagram page. But I think what we... I feel like is even more important is the connection that we have with all of you, which we value and we see as like our number one priority. What's better is when Dr. K basically says, I like this because it does this for my practice or my patient or my consumer or for me or for my office. Because to me, like, we also want to be talked to in an authentic way. I mean,
right.
I know when a brand is talking to me and the corporate person is talking to me versus...
Your ears tune out, right? You
they
can
tune
tell
out.
When you're being advertised to. And I
That's
try
right.
to teach that to my staff because I'm good at marketing.
Yes.
So I teach marketing and I kind of explain to them, like, okay, that looks like an ad. Don't you feel it? You feel it on a visceral level.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
And it's taken me 5 years, Edris, of talking to companies to teach them that
mm-hmm.
the physicians are their influencers.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
we in aesthetics that are doing things and putting content out there, that we're your influencers. I work with influencers too on a social media level, but we got to realize like we're the ones putting your voice out there. So it's an interesting proposition to work together, to make it fun, to communicate, to I call it edutainment.
Yeah, that's good. Cool. Yeah,
entertainment
that's
cool.
Yeah,
and education
right.
at the same
that's
time.
Right.
We
agree with that. And I think, listen, if we need to do a better job at, we agree with that. We agree. We want people to hear an authentic voice. And I know sometimes even with our compliance and legal, you're, you know,
yeah.
backed up. But we, you know, the best is when you yourself believe in
exactly.
one of our brands and you've had a good experience and you talk about it.
I love to see you guys evolving to do more injector education. I think
yeah,
that is a really nice investment in solidifying like this future of like, the rapid growth of aesthetics needs to be supported by the education of young injectors.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because otherwise that ruins the industry if everybody's out there with the overfilled looking faces. And
yeah.
and so the injection teaching is so critical. So.
Yeah, we I'm so glad that you brought it up. Injection training is one of, at least my key priorities, our key priorities. So we are investing almost double than what we did last year. And what we see is important is to get, you know, really we feel like we can scale, and, you know, to start early,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, get people who are early on, putting needles in the face for the very first time, that they do it the right way. And certainly across the industry, I think everybody's investing. And I think the more we all invest as an industry, the better. But it is a key priority that we plan to really, over the next, I would say, 10 years, continue to be a leader in that space when it comes to education. So I fully agree that injector training and education will set the trajectory of kind of what this business looks like,
the
right?
Pillar of one of your content pillars.
Absolutely, like, absolutely.
I think that's a great investment going forward.
Yeah.
What's your advice for a woman getting into female leadership position?
I think it's kind of what I said before. My advice for women not getting into female leadership, like, you know, ask for the big job.
Yeah.
If you're qualified and you're competent, and don't wait to be ready. You'll never be ready.
That's so true.
You'll never be ready.
And get yourself a good mentor.
And there's nothing wrong with asking for the big job. The reason why I like to give that advice is if you ask for the big job and you're not ready for the big job, or people don't think you can do the big job, then at least you can start talking about what things you need to do to get the big job.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And maybe if no one in that organization thinks that you're ready for the big job, or you have the competencies to get the big job, and you've listened to the things that you need to do and you're starting to get the big job, go ask for the big job somewhere else.
Keep asking until you get
Just
it.
Just keep asking until you get it.
I've had to do that in my career too, where I've asked and asked and asked to be on committees and boards, and then someone gives you a break.
Somebody will.
Someone is your mentor, and then you break that crack in the ceiling, and then that's the next level for you.
Yeah,
that's been huge for me.
I mean, there's been a lot of women. I mean, again, you can edit this out. I mean, I read Michelle Obama's book, and when I read that book,
Not editing anything. All
I was thinking was, like, golly, I am not dreaming big enough. If you read that book, at each stage, she was taking different, bigger jobs that she wasn't always qualified for, but she kept taking bigger jobs. And then she had no, you know, idea that she would become, like, the first lady.
Right.
But she had to take all of those other chances, I think, to do that job in a way that she feels good about, whether others do or not. But she had an impact in that job in a way that she wanted to. And what led her there was she kept taking jobs, big jobs, that she probably wasn't ready for. And when I read that book, I was thinking to myself, I am not dreaming big enough. I think as women, we don't dream big enough.
No, one of the problems as being a woman is you're so caught up in the day-to-day of the household,
and
the chores, and the children, and the husband, and the spouse, maintenance.
Yes.
I mean, you forget your dreams. I tell my daughters, think of who you were when you were 10 years old, and I ask you, what do you want to be when you grow up? You have all that in you still, and you suppress it for a good 20 years.
That's right.
And then you got to, I'm at the stage where I'm like, what did I want to be? I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be an artist.
Yeah.
I wanted to create. So I feel like I'm getting a second bloom.
Yeah.
But don't forget who you are or what you wanted.
That is so, so, so true. Again, I think whatever you think you can do today, you can do so much more.
That's a great
Whatever
message.
We think we can do today, you are capable of doing so much more.
And what's the fear that holds people back from even trying?
I think we stop dreaming. I think exactly what you said. I mean, that'll be my takeaway. Don't stop dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to be, you know, again, I always say somebody's got to be the CEO. Somebody's got to be the president.
Right.
Somebody's got to be the chair of the hospital. Somebody's got to be, you know, the president of the board or the chairman of the board. We stop dreaming.
Yeah.
You know, at 7, I mean, we don't know how to, like, you know, tell ourselves we can't. We say we can do anything, you know?
Oh, my God. You're like, I'm going to be an astronaut and a ballet dancer and a teacher.
I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to be this. And then what happens is over the years, like, you know, we forget all
those
things.
Your own brain knocks down your own confidence.
That's exactly
right.
So it's like, be the person who your 7-year-old self wanted to be.
Totally. Be the person your dog thinks you are, too.
That's true. You know? And if we never achieve it, oh, well.
At least you tried,
you know.
What's your next big dream? If nothing was holding you back, what would you be?
I should have been a doctor.
Wow.
I always wanted to be a doctor, and
really?
I should have been a doctor.
Gosh.
If you asked me at 7 years old what I wanted to do, I wanted to be a doctor.
Wow.
And I wanted to be a pediatrician. And now, as I look at what you guys do, man, I would have loved surgery. And my 7-year-old self, I always answered that way. And now, you know, much older than that, but there's still always, I think for all of us, there's a reason why, you know, I'm sure I wanted to be a doctor then or whatever you dreamed at 7. And we should get underneath what that is and why and think about all the ways that we can still become who our 7-year-old person thought we could be.
The core of it, like take those values and skills and put them where they've evolved to.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, on that positive note, that's an amazing piece of advice is to follow, find your dream and don't give up on it.
Yeah. Be the person who your 7-year-old wanted you to be.
Well, I'm so delighted that you came all the way for this interview, and your voice is going to inspire a lot of women in aesthetics, as well as anybody listening to this podcast.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
You're such a strong and powerful individual. Like, honestly, I can feel your strength, and I feel very grateful that Allergan has someone like you to be one of the captains of the ship.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the partnership. We're in this together, and I'm so honored to be asked by, you know, somebody of your stature. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. Yeah. Well, there you have it, guys. Edris, are you on Instagram?
I am on Instagram.
Give us your social handle if anyone wants to reach out.
Oh, yes. Follow. It's adris.simmons@abv.com, I think it is. At adris.simmons.
And we're going to spell that E-D-R-I-C-E and yes. Simmons with 2 M's at abby.com.
Yes.
There you have it. I'll stick it in the podcast notes as well. And you can always reach out to her through Allergan as well. You can find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y, doing amazing things with people's faces. And our website is the same, www.beautybydrk.com. That's where you can find our awesome skincare. I'm going to send you home with my most favorite vitamin C serum today.
Oh, thank you.
You're going to love it.
Oh.
That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.